Abiogenesis. This sound file contains the spoken version of a Wikipedia article on abiogenesis. The material recorded is current as on the 20th of February 2012. The sound recording of this article has been made in four parts. You are listening to the first part, which contains the introduction and contents. The second part contains Section 1, Fundamental Concepts, Section 2, Conceptual History, Spontaneous Generation, Pasteur and Darwin, and the Primordial Soup Theory, and Section 3, Early Conditions. The third part contains Section 4, Current Models, including the Miller-Urey Experiment, the Deep Sea Vent Theory, Fox's Experiments, Eigen's Hypothesis, Hoffman's Contributions, Wachterhauser's Hypothesis, Deep Sea Black Smokers, Radioactive Beach Hypothesis, Thermodynamic Origin of Life, Models to Explain Homo Chirality, Self-Organization and Replication, Organic Molecules to Protocells, the RNA World Hypothesis, the Iron-Sulfur World, Thermosynthesis World, and Possible Role of Bubbles, and contains Section 5, Other Models, including Autocatalysis, Clay's Hypothesis, Gold's Deep Hot Biosphere Model, Primitive Extraterrestrial Life, Lipid World, Polyphosphates, PAH World Hypothesis, and Multiple Genesis. The first part begins now. Abiogenesis. From Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia at en.wikipedia.org. Introduction. Abiogenesis is the study of how biological life would arise from inorganic matter through natural processes. In particular, the term usually refers to the processes by which life on Earth is thought to have arisen. We now come to the end of the spoken article, Abiogenesis, Part 1. The next part, Part 2, contains Section 1, Fundamental Concepts, Section 2, Conceptual History, and Section 3, Early Conditions. The second part begins now. Abiogenesis. Section 1, Fundamental Concepts. Three major macromolecules are essential for all known forms of life. The first is deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA. DNA is the main component of chromosomes and the material that transfers genetic characteristics in all life forms. DNA is an extremely long macromolecule that is constructed of two nucleotide strands coiled around each other in a ladder-like arrangement, with the side bases composed of alternating phosphate and deoxyribose units, and the rungs composed of the bases adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine. The genetic information of DNA is encoded in the sequence of the bases and is transcribed as the strands unwind and replicate. The second major macromolecule essential for all known forms of life is RNA. Ribonucleic acid, or RNA, are single-stranded molecules transcribed from DNA, containing along the strand a linear sequence of nucleotide bases that is complementary to the DNA strand from which it is transcribed. The composition of the RNA molecule is identical with that of DNA, except for the substitution of the sugar ribose for deoxyribose, and the substitution of the nucleotide base uracil for thymine. The third major macromolecule essential for all known forms of life are proteins. Proteins are highly varied organic molecules constituting a large portion of the mass of every life form and necessary in the diet of all animals and other non-photosynthesizing organisms. Proteins are composed of 20 or more amino acids linked in a genetically controlled linear sequence into one or more long polypeptide chains. Polypeptides are made of single linked peptides. Most amino acids, building blocks from which proteins are constructed, and often called the, quote, building blocks of life, end quote, can form via natural chemical reactions unrelated to life. Other equally fundamental biochemicals that, when joined together, make up the structural units of RNA and DNA can arise in similar ways. In all living things, these biochemicals are organized into more complex molecules, including macromolecules such as proteins and nucleic acids DNA or RNA. The construction of these macromolecules, mediated by these nucleic acids and enzymes that are themselves synthesized through biochemical pathways, catalyzed accelerated its chemical change, largely by proteins. Which of these various classes of organic molecules first arose and how they formed the first life is a major topic in the discipline of abiogenesis. The first living things on Earth are thought to be single-cell prokaryotes, which lack a cell nucleus, perhaps evolved from protobionts, organic molecules surrounded by a membrane-like structure. The oldest ancient fossil microbe-like objects are dated to be 3.5 billion years old, approximately 1 billion years after the formation of the Earth itself, with reliable fossil evidence of the first life found in rocks 3.4 billion years ago. Isotopes are any of two or more forms of a chemical element having the same number of protons in the nucleus, or the same atomic number, but having different numbers of neutrons in the nucleus, or different atomic weights. By 2.4 billion years ago, the ratio of stable isotopes of carbon, iron, and sulfur shows the action of living things on inorganic minerals and sediments, and sediments and molecular biomarkers indicate photosynthesis, demonstrating that life on Earth was widespread by this time. The sequence of chemical events that led to the first nucleic acids is not known. Several hypotheses about early life have been proposed, most notably the iron-sulfur world theory, metabolism without genetics, and the RNA world hypothesis, RNA life forms. Section 2. Conceptual History. Spontaneous Generation. Until the early 19th century, people generally believed in the ongoing, spontaneous generation of certain forms of life from non-living matter. This was paired with the belief in heterogenesis, that is, that one form of life derived from a different form, for example, bees from flowers. Classical notions of abiogenesis, now more precisely known as spontaneous generation, held that certain complex living organisms are generated by decaying organic substances. According to Aristotle, it was a readily observable truth that aphids arose from the dew that fall on plants, flies from putrid matter, mice from dirty hay, crocodiles from rotting logs at the bottom of bodies of water, and so on. In the 17th century, such assumptions started to be questioned. For example, in 1646, Sir Thomas Brown published his Pseudodoxia Epidemica, subtitled inquiries into very many received tenets and commonly presumed truths, which was an attack on false beliefs and, quote, vulgar errors, end quote. His conclusions were not widely accepted. For example, his contemporary Alexander Ross wrote, quote, "To question this spontaneous generation is to question reason, sense, and experience. If he doubts of this, let him go to Egypt, and there he will find the fields swarming with mice begot of the mud of Nilus, to the great calamity of the inhabitants," end quote. In 1665, Robert Hooke published the first drawings of a microorganism. Hooke was followed in 1676 by Anton van Leeuwenhoek, who drew and described microorganisms that are now thought to have been protozoa and bacteria. Many felt that the existence of microorganisms was evidence in support of spontaneous generation, since microorganisms seemed too simplistic for sexual reproduction, and asexual reproduction through cell division had not yet been observed. The first solid evidence against spontaneous generation came in 1668 from Francesco Redi, who proved that no maggots appeared in meat when flies were prevented from laying eggs. The previous sentiment regarding spontaneous generation was false. The alternative seemed to be biogenesis, that every living thing came from a pre-existing living thing. Omne vivum ex ovo, Latin for every living thing from an egg. In 1768, Lazzaro Spallanzani demonstrated that microbes were present in the air and could be killed by boiling. Louis Pasteur performed a series of experiments which demonstrated that organisms, such as bacteria and fungi, do not spontaneously appear in sterile, nutrient-rich media. Pasteur and Darwin. By the middle of the 19th century, the theory of biogenesis had accumulated so much evidential support due to the work of Louis Pasteur and others that the alternative theory of spontaneous generation had been effectively disproven. Pasteur himself remarked after a definitive finding in 1864, quote, "Never will the doctrine of spontaneous generation recover from the mortal blow struck by this simple experiment," end quote. In a letter to Joseph Dalton Hooker on February 1, 1871, Charles Darwin addressed the question, suggesting that the original spark of life may have begun in a, quote, "warm little pond with all sorts of ammonia and phosphoric salts, lights, heat, electricity, etc., present, so that a protein compound was chemically formed, ready to undergo still more complex changes," end quote. He went on to explain that, quote, "at the present day, such matter would be instantly devoured or absorbed, which would not have been the case before living creatures were formed. In other words, the presence of life itself makes the search for the origin of life dependent on the sterile conditions of the laboratory." Primordial soup theory. No new notable research or theory on the subject appeared until 1924, when Alexander Oparin reasoned that atmospheric oxygen prevents the synthesis of certain inorganic compounds that are necessary building blocks for the evolution of life. In his The Origin of Life, Oparin proposed that the, quote, "spontaneous generation of life," end quote, that had been attacked by Louis Pasteur did in fact occur once, but was now impossible because the conditions found on the early Earth had changed, and pre-existing organisms would immediately consume any spontaneously generated organism. Oparin argued that a, quote, "primeval soup," end quote, of organic molecules could be created in an oxygenless atmosphere through the action of sunlight. These would combine in ever more complex ways until they formed coacervate droplets. These droplets would, quote, grow, end quote, by fusion with other droplets and, quote, reproduce, end quote, through fission into daughter droplets, and so have a primitive metabolism in which those factors which promote, quote, cell integrity, end quote, survive, and those that do not become extinct. Many modern theories of the origin of life still take Operin's ideas as a starting point. Around the same time, J.B.S. Haldane suggested that the Earth's prebiotic oceans, different from their modern counterparts, would have formed a, quote, hot dilute soup, end quote, in which organic compounds could have formed, the process of living matter evolving from self-replicating but non-living molecules. In 1952, in the Miller-Urey experiment, a mixture of water, hydrogen, methane, and ammonia was cycled through an apparatus that delivered electrical sparks to the mixture. After 1 week, it was found that about 10% to 15% of the carbon in the system was now in the form of organic compounds, including amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. The underlying hypothesis held by Operin and Haldane was that conditions on the primeval Earth favored chemical reactions that synthesized organic compounds from inorganic precursors. A recent reanalysis of the saved vials containing the original extracts that resulted in the Miller and Urey experiments has uncovered more biochemicals than originally discovered in the 1950s. One of the more important findings was 23 amino acids, far more than the 5 originally discovered. Section 3. Early Conditions. Oceans and continental crust existed within 150 million years of Earth's formation, appearing first in the Hadean Aeon. Despite this, the Hadean environment was one highly hazardous to life. Frequent collisions with large objects up to 500 kilometers or 310 miles in diameter would have been sufficient to vaporize the ocean within a few months of impact, with hot steam mixed with rock vapor leading to high-altitude clouds completely covering the planet. After a few months, the height of these clouds would have begun to decrease, but the cloud base would still have been elevated for about the next 1,000 years. After that, it would have begun to rain at low altitude. For another 2,000 years, rains would slowly have drawn down the height of the clouds, returning the oceans to their original depths only 3,000 years after the impact event. Between 3.8 and 4.1 billion years ago, changes in the orbits of the gaseous giant planets may have caused a late heavy bombardment that pockmarked the Moon and other inner planets, Mercury, Mars, and presumably Earth and Venus. This would likely have sterilized the planet had life appeared before that time. By examining the time interval between such devastating environmental events, the time interval when life might first have come into existence can be found for different early environments. A study shows that if the deep marine hydrothermal setting provides a suitable site for the origin of life, abiogenesis could have appeared as early as 4.0 to 4.2 billion years ago, whereas if it occurred at the surface of the Earth, abiogenesis could only have occurred between 3.7 and 4.0 billion years ago. Other research suggests a colder start to life. Work by Leslie Argell and colleagues on the synthesis of purines, fundamental constituents of nucleic acids, has shown that freezing temperatures are advantageous due to the concentrating effect for key precursors such as hydrogen cyanide. Research by Stanley Miller and colleagues suggested a beginning of life involving freezing conditions and exploding meteorites, indicating the formation of 7 different amino acids and 11 types of nucleic bases in ice after ammonia and cyanide were left in a freezer from 1972 to 1997. This study also describes research by Christoph Beibrücker showing the formation of RNA molecules 400 bases long under freezing conditions using an RNA template, a single-strand chain of RNA that guides the formation of a new strand of DNA. As that new RNA strand grows, it adheres to the template. The explanation given for the unusual speed of these reactions at such a low temperature is eutectic freezing. As an ice crystal forms, it stays pure. Only molecules of water join the growing crystal, while impurities, like salt or cyanide, are excluded. These impurities become crowded in microscopic pockets of liquid within the ice, and this crowding causes the molecules to collide more often. Evidence of the early appearance of life comes from the Isua supercrustal belt in western Greenland and from similar formations in the nearby Achelia Islands. Carbon entering into rock formations leaves isotopic fingerprints that are preserved in the sediments and suggest that life existed on the planet already by 3.85 billion years ago. Lazcano and Miller, in 1994, suggested that the rapidity of the evolution of life is dictated by the rate of recirculating water through mid-ocean submarine vents. Complete recirculation takes 10 million years. Thus, any organic compounds produced by then would be altered or destroyed by temperatures exceeding 300 degrees Celsius, or 572 degrees Fahrenheit. They estimate that the development of a 100 kilobase genome of a DNA/protein primitive heterotroph into a 7,000 gene filamentous cyanobacterium would have required only 7 million years. The Nobel Prize winning chemist Christian de Duvet argues that the determination of chemistry means that, quote, life has to emerge quickly. Chemical reactions happen quickly or not at all. If any reaction takes a millennium to complete, then the chances are all the reagents will simply dissipate or break down in the meantime, unless they are replenished by other faster reactions, end quote. We now come to the end of the spoken article, Abiogenesis, Part 2. The next part of the recording, Part 3, contains Section 4, Current Models. The third part begins now. Abiogenesis. Section 4, Current Models. Most currently accepted models draw at least some elements from the framework laid out by the Operon-Haldane hypothesis. Under that umbrella, however, are a wide array of discoveries and postulations. Some theorists suggest that the atmosphere of the early Earth may have been chemically reducing in nature, composed primarily of methane, ammonia, water, hydrogen sulfide, carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide, and phosphate, with molecular oxygen and ozone either rare or absent. In such a reducing atmosphere, electrical activity can accelerate chemical change or catalyze the creation of certain basic small molecules, monomers of life, such as amino acids. This was demonstrated in the Miller-Urey experiment. Phospholipids of an appropriate length can form lipid bilayers, a basic component of the cell membrane. Since replication is accompanied in the modern cells through the cooperative action of proteins and nucleic acids, the major schools of thought about how the process originated can be broadly classified as proteins first, end quote, and, quote, nucleic acids first, end quote. In the, quote, nucleic acids first, end quote, argument, the polymerization of nucleotides into random RNA molecules might have resulted in self-replicating ribosomes, the RNA world hypothesis. Ribosomes are the site of protein manufacture. Selection pressures for catalytic efficiency and diversity might have resulted in ribosomes forming small proteins. The first ribosome might have been created by such a process, resulting in more prevalent protein synthesis. Then, synthesized proteins might then outcompete ribosomes in catalytic ability, and therefore become the dominant bipolymer, regulating nucleic acids to their modern use, predominantly as a carrier of genomic information. No one has synthesized a, quote, proto-cell, end quote, using basic components which would have the necessary properties of life, the so-called bottom-up approach. However, some researchers are working in this field, notably Steen Rasmussen at Los Alamos National Laboratory and Jack Stoskak at Harvard University. Others have argued that a top-down approach is more feasible. One such approach, successfully attempted by Craig Venter and others at the Institute for Genomic Research, involves engineering existing prokaryotic cells with progressively fewer genes, attempting to discern at which point the most minimal requirements for life were reached. The biologist John Desmond Bernal suggested that there were a number of clearly defined, quote, stages, end quote, that could be recognized in explaining the origin of life. Stage 1, the origin of biological monomers. Stage 2, the origin of biological polymers. And stage 3, the evolution from molecules to cells. Bernal suggested that evolution might have commenced early, sometime between stage 1 and 2. Monomer formation. One of the most important pieces of experimental support for the soup theory came in 1953. The now famous Miller-Urey experiment provided direct experimental support for the second point of the, quote, soup, end quote, theory. And it is around the remaining two points of the theory that much of the debate now centers. Apart from the Miller-Urey experiment, the next most important step in research on prebiotic organic synthesis was the demonstration by the biochemist Joan Orrell that the nucleic acid purine base, adenine, was formed by heating aqueous ammonium cyanide solutions. In support of abiogenesis in eutectic ice, more recent work demonstrated the formation of alternative nucleobases, as well as cytosine and uracil, and adenine from solutions subjected to freeze-thaw cycles under a reductive atmosphere with spark discharges as an energy source. Biochemist Robert Shapiro has summarized the primordial soup theory of Oparin and Haldane in its, quote, mature form, end quote, as follows. The early Earth had a chemically reducing atmosphere, and this atmosphere, exposed to energy in various forms, produced simple organic compounds, monomers. These monomers accumulated in a soup, which may have been concentrated at various locations, shorelines, oceanic vents, etc. By further transformation, more complex organic polymers, and ultimately life, developed in the soup. The spontaneous formation of complex polymers from abiotically generated monomers under the conditions posited by the soup theory is not at all a straightforward process. Besides the basic organic monomers, compounds that would have prohibited the formation of polymers were formed in high concentration during the Miller-Urey experiment and experiments by Joan Orol. The Miller experiment, for example, produces many substances that would undergo cross-reactions with the amino acids or terminate the peptide chain. More fundamentally, it can be argued that the most crucial challenge unanswered by this theory is how the relatively simple organic building blocks combine, or polymerize, and form more complex structures, interacting in consistent ways to form a protocell. For example, in an aqueous environment, hydrolysis of monomers into oligomers into polymers and polymers into their constituent monomers would be favored over the condensation of individual monomers into polymers. Reducing atmosphere. Whether the mixture of gases used in the Miller-Urey experiment truly reflects the atmospheric content of early Earth is a controversial topic. Other less reducing gases produce a lower yield and variety. It was once thought that appreciable amounts of molecular oxygen were present in the prebiotic atmosphere, which would have essentially prevented the formation of organic molecules. However, the current scientific consensus is that such was not the case. The deep sea vent theory. The deep sea vent, or hydrothermal vent, theory for the origin of life on Earth posits that life may have begun as submarine hydrothermal vents, where hydrogen-rich fluids emerge from below the sea floor and interface with carbon dioxide-rich ocean water. Sustained chemical energy in such systems is derived from redox reactions in which electron donors, such as molecular hydrogen, react with electron acceptors, such as carbon dioxide. Chemist Mike Russell demonstrated that alkaline vents created a chemical gradient in which conditions are ideal for an abiogenic hatchery for life. These microscopic compartments, quote, provide a natural means of concentrating organic molecules composed of iron sulfur minerals, endowed by these mineral cells with the catalytic properties envisaged by Gunther Wachterschauser. Fox's experiments. In the 1950s and 1960s, Sidney W. Fox studied the spontaneous formation of peptide structures under conditions that might plausibly have existed early in Earth's history. He demonstrated that amino acids could spontaneously form small peptides, These amino acids and small peptides could be encouraged to form closed spherical membranes he called, quote, proteinoid microspheres, end quote, which show many of the basic characteristics of, quote, life, end quote. Egan's hypothesis. In the early 1970s, the problem of the origin of life was approached by Manfred Egan and Peter Schuster of the Max Planck Institute for Biophysical Chemistry. They examined the transient stages between the molecular chaos and a self-replicating hypercycle in a prebiotic soup. In a hypercycle, the information storing system, possibly RNA, produces an enzyme which catalyzes the formation of another information system until the product of the last aids in the formation of the first information system. Mathematically treated, hypercycles could create quasi-species which, through natural selection, entered into a form of Darwinian evolution. A boost to hypercycle theory was the discovery that RNA, in certain circumstances, forms itself into ribosomes capable of catalyzing their own chemical reactions. However, these reactions are limited to self-excisions, in which a longer RNA molecule becomes shorter, and much rarer small additions that are incapable of coding for any useful protein. The hypercycle theory is further degraded since the hypothetical RNA would require the existence of complex biochemicals such as nucleotides, which are not formed under the conditions proposed by the Miller-Urey experiment. Hoffman's contributions. Jeffrey W. Hoffman contributed to the concept of life involving both replication and metabolism, emerging from catalytic noise. His contributions included showing that an early sloppy translation machinery can be stable against an error catastrophe of the type that had been envisaged as problematical by Leslie Orgel, Orgel's paradox, and calculations regarding the occurrence of a set of required catalytic activities that would be disruptive. This is called the stochastic theory. Wachter Schauser's hypothesis. Deep black smoker. Another possible answer to this polymerization conundrum was provided in the 1980s by the German chemist Günther Wachter Schauser, encouraged and supported by Karl R. Popper in his iron-sulfur world theory. In this theory, he postulated the evolution of biochemical pathways as fundamentals of the evolution of life. Moreover, he presented a consistent system of tracing today's biochemistry back to ancestral reactions that provide alternative pathways to the synthesis of organic building blocks from simple gaseous molecules. In contrast to the classical Miller experiments, which depend on external sources of energy, such as simulated lightning or ultraviolet irradiation, quote, Wachter Schauser's systems, end quote, come with a built-in source of energy, sulfides of iron and other minerals, for example, pyrite. The energy released from redox reactions of these metal sulfides is not only available for the synthesis of organic molecules, but also for the formation of oligomers and polymers. It is therefore hypothesized that such systems may be able to evolve into autocatalytic sets of self-replicating, metabolically active entities that would predate the life forms known today. the radioactive beach hypothesis. Zachary Adam at the University of Washington, Seattle, claims that stronger tidal processes from a much closer moon may have concentrated grains of uranium and other radioactive elements, the high water mark on primordial beaches, where they may have been responsible for generating life's building blocks. According to computer models, a deposit of such radioactive materials could show the same self-sustaining nuclear reaction as that found in the Oklo uranium ore seam in Gabon. Such radioactive beach sand provides sufficient energy to generate organic molecules such as amino acids and sugars. Radioactive monazite also releases soluble phosphate into regions between sand grains, making it biologically, quote, accessible, end quote. Thus, amino acids, sugars, and soluble phosphates can all be simultaneously produced, according to Adam. Radioactive actinides, then in greater concentrations, could have formed part of organometallic complexes. These complexes could have been important early catalysts to living processes. John Parnell of the University of Aberdeen suggests that such a process could provide part of the, quote, crucible of life, end quote, on any early wet rocky planet, so long as the planet is large enough to have generated a system of plate tectonics which brings radioactive materials to the surface. As the early Earth is believed to have had many smaller, quote, platelets, end quote, it would provide a suitable environment for such processes. Thermodynamic origin of life. Entropy is a measure of the energy that is not available for work during a thermodynamic process because of thermodynamic variables such as temperature, pressure, or composition. Carol Michaelian of the National Autonomous University of Mexico points out that any model for the origin of life must take into account the fact that life is an irreversible thermodynamic process which arises and persists to produce entropy. Entropy production is not incidental to the process of life, but rather the fundamental reason for its existence. Present-day life augments the entropy production of Earth by catalyzing the water cycle through evapotranspiration. Michaelian argues that if the thermodynamic function of life today is to produce entropy through coupling with the water cycle, then this probably was its function at its early beginnings. It turns out that both RNA and DNA, when in water solution, are very strong absorbers and extremely rapid dissipators of ultraviolet light, the high energy part of the sun's spectrum. Just that high energy part of the sun's spectrum could have penetrated the dense prebiotic atmosphere. Nassim et al. Have shown that the amount of ultraviolet, or UV, light reaching the Earth's surface in the Archean could have been up to 31 orders of magnitude larger than it is today, where RNA and DNA absorb most strongly. Absorption and dissipation of UV light by these organic molecules at the Archean ocean surface would have increased significantly the temperature of the surface skin layer, leading to enhanced evaporation and thus augmenting the primitive water cycle. Since absorption and dissipation of high-energy photons is an entropy-producing process, Michaelian argues that non-equilibrium abiogenic synthesis of RNA and DNA utilizing UV light would have been thermodynamically favored. A simple mechanism to explain the replication of RNA and DNA without the use of enzymes can also be given within the same thermodynamic framework by assuming a temperature-assisted mechanism of replication. That life arose when the temperature of the primitive seas had cooled to somewhat below the denaturing temperature of RNA or DNA. Denaturation means to treat a protein or the like by chemical or physical means so as to alter its original state. During night, the surface water temperature would be below the denaturing temperature, and single-strand RNA/DNA could act as a template for the formation of double-strand RNA/DNA. During the daylight hours, RNA and DNA would absorb UV light and convert this directly to heating of the ocean surface, raising the local temperature enough to allow for denaturing of RNA and DNA. The copying process would be repeated during the cool period overnight. Michaelian suggests that traditional origin of life research, expecting to describe the emergence of life from near equilibrium conditions, is erroneous, and that non-equilibrium conditions must be considered, in particular, the importance of entropy production to the emergence of life. Since denaturation would be most probable in the late afternoon, when the Archean sea surface temperature would be highest, and since late afternoon submarine sunlight is somewhat circularly polarized, the homochirality of the organic molecules of life can also be explained within the proposed thermodynamic framework. Models to explain homochirality. The term chiral is used to describe an object that is non-superimposable on its mirror image. Human hands are perhaps the most universally recognized example of chirality. The left hand is a non-superimposable mirror image of the right hand. This difference in symmetry becomes obvious if someone attempts to shake the right hand of a person using his left hand, or if a left-handed glove is placed on a right hand. The term homochirality refers to all building blocks of living organisms having the same handedness, or chirality, amino acids being left-handed, nucleic acid sugars, ribose and deoxyribose, being right-handed, and also chiral phosphoglycerides. Some processes in chemical evolution must account for the origin of homochirality, i.e., chiral molecules can be synthesized. But in the absence of a chiral source or a chiral catalyst, they are formed in a 50-50 mixture of both enantiomer, the pair of optical isomers that are mirror images of each other. This is called a racemic mixture. Racemism is the state of being optically inactive and separable into two other substances of the same chemical composition as the original substance. It has been suggested that homochirality may have started in space, as the studies of the amino acids on the Murchison meteorite showed. It is suggested that polarized light has the power to destroy one enantiomer within the protoplanetary disk. Beta decay caused the breakdown of D-leucine in a racemic mixture, and thus the presence of carbon-14, present in larger amounts in inorganic chemicals in the early Earth environment, could have been the cause. Chemist Robert M. Hazen reports upon experiments conducted in which various chiral crystal surfaces act as sites for possible concentration and assembly of chiral monomer units into macromolecules. Once established, chirality would be selected for. Studies of organic compounds found on meteorites tend to suggest that chirality is a characteristic of abiogenic synthesis, as amino acids show a left-handed bias, whereas sugars show a predominantly right-handed bias. Self-organization and replication. While features of self-organization and self-replication are often considered the hallmark of living systems, there are many instances of abiotic molecules exhibiting such characteristics under proper conditions. For example, Martin and Russell showed that physical compartmentation by cell membranes from the environment and self-organization of self-contained redox reactions are the most conserved attributes of living things, and they argue therefore that inorganic matter with such attributes would be life's most likely last common ancestor. Virus self-assembly within host cells has implications for the study of the origin of life, as it lends further credence to the hypothesis that life could have started as self-assembling organic molecules. From organic molecules to protocells. Researcher Martin Hanzik supports the idea of a gradient between life and non-life, i.e., there is no simple line between the two. He thinks that building simple protocells in the lab is one of the first steps toward understanding more complex cells, including those that may have later evolved into complex life. Hanzik says that living cells often consist of somewhere around 1 million types of molecules, whereas his labs are first aiming at creating lifelike systems using around 10 molecules. His protocells display behaviors even simpler than those displayed by things like viruses. For example, only basic motion, dividing and combining cell walls, and so on. The RNA world hypothesis. The RNA world hypothesis describes an early Earth with self-replicating and catalytic RNA, but no DNA or proteins. This has spurred scientists to try to determine if relatively short RNA molecules could have spontaneously formed that were capable of catalyzing their own continuing replication. A number of hypotheses of modes of formation have been put forward. Early cell membranes could have formed spontaneously from proteinoids, protein-like molecules that are produced when amino acid solutions are heated. When present at the correct concentration in aqueous solution, these form microspheres, which are observed to behave similarly to membrane-enclosed compartments. Other possibilities include systems of chemical reactions taking place within clay substrates or on the surface of pyrite rocks. Factors supportive of an important role for RNA in early life include its ability to act both to store information and catalyze chemical reactions as a ribosome, its many important roles as an intermediate in the expression and maintenance of the genetic information, the form of DNA in modern organisms, and the ease of chemical synthesis of at least the components of the molecule under conditions approximating the early Earth. Relatively short RNA molecules, which can duplicate others, have been artificially produced in the lab. Such replicase RNA, which functions as both code and catalyst, provides a template upon which copying can occur. Biologist Jack Szostak has shown that certain catalytic RNA can indeed join smaller RNA sequences together, creating the potential in the right conditions for self-replication. If these were present, Darwinian selection would favor the proliferation of such self-catalyzing structures, to which further functionalities could be added. An RNA enzyme capable of self-sustained replication has been identified. Researchers have pointed out difficulties for the abiotic synthesis of nucleotides from cytosine and uracil, Cytosine has a half-life of 19 days at 100 degrees Celsius, 212 degrees Fahrenheit, and 17,000 years in freezing water. A study by Loralde et al., 1995, say that, quote, "the generally accepted prebiotic synthesis of ribose, the foremost reaction, yields numerous sugars without any selectivity," end quote. And they conclude that their, quote, "results suggest that the backbone of the first genetic material could not have contained ribose or other sugars because of their instability," end quote. A slightly different version of the RNA world hypothesis is that a different type of nucleic acid, such as PNA, TNA, or GNA, was the first one to emerge as a self-reproducing molecule to be replaced by RNA only later. Pyrimidine ribonucleosides and their respective nucleotides have been prebiotically synthesized by a sequence of reactions which bypass the free sugars and are assembled in a stepwise fashion. In a series of publications, the Sutherland Group at the School of Chemistry, University of Manchester, have demonstrated high-yielding routes to cytidine and uridine ribonucleotides built from small 2 and 3 carbon fragments. Chemist James Ferris's studies have shown that clay minerals of montmorillonite will catalyze the formation of RNA in aqueous solution by joining activated mono-RNA nucleotides to join together to form longer chains. Although these chains have random sequences, the possibility that one sequence began to non-randomly increase its frequency by increasing the speed of its catalysis is possible to, quote, "kick-start," end quote, biochemical evolution. Metabolism first models. Several models reject the idea of the self-replication of a, quote, "naked gene," end quote, and postulate the emergence of a primitive metabolism which could provide an environment for the later emergence of RNA replication. The Krebs cycle, or citric acid cycle, is a series of chemical reactions carried out in the living cell in most higher animals, and is essential for the oxidative metabolism of glucose and other simple sugars. The centrality of the Krebs cycle to energy production in aerobic organisms and in drawing in carbon dioxide and hydrogen ions in biosynthesis of complex organic molecules, including amino acids and nucleotides, suggests that it was one of the first parts of the metabolism to evolve. Harold Morowitz concludes that given sufficient concentrations of ingredients, the cycle will, quote, "spin," end quote, of its own. As the concentration of each intermediate rises, it tends to convert into the next intermediate spontaneously. It thus appears to be an origin, not a creation of the genes, but the product of thermodynamics and chemistry alone. Somewhat in agreement with these notions, physicist Sean Carroll has proposed that, quote, "the purpose of life is to hydrogenate carbon dioxide," end quote. Iron-sulfur world. One of the earliest incarnations of this idea was put forward in 1924 with Alexander Operin's notion of primitive self-replicating vesicles, which predated the discovery of the structure of DNA. More recent variants in the 1980s and 1990s include Günter Wachterschauser's iron-sulfur world theory and models introduced by Christian D. Duvet based on the chemistry of thioesters. More abstract and theoretical arguments for the plausibility of the emergence of metabolism without the presence of genes include a mathematical model introduced by theoretical physicist and mathematician Freeman John Dyson in the early 1980s, and Stuart Kaufman's notion of collectively autocatalytic sets, discussed later in that decade. However, the idea that a closed metabolic cycle, such as the reductive citric acid cycle, could form spontaneously, proposed by Wachterschauser, remains debated. In his article entitled Self-Organizing Biochemical Cycles, Orgel summarized his analysis of the proposal by stating, quote, "There is at present no reason to expect that multi-step cycles, such as the reductive citric acid cycle, will self-organize on the surface of iron sulfide or some other mineral," end quote. It is possible that another type of metabolic pathway was used at the beginning of life. Thermosynthesis world. Thermosynthesis is a mechanism proposed by Anthony W.J. Muller, making use of free energy from temperature gradients for thermodynamically unfavored anabolic reactions. Today's bioenergetic process of fermentation is related to the citric acid cycle, which has been connected to the primordial iron-sulfur world. In a different approach, today's bioenergetic process of chemiosmosis, the diffusion of ions across a selectively permeable membrane, which plays an essential role in cellular respiration and photosynthesis, is considered as more fundamental than fermentation. ATP, or adenosine triphosphate, is the organic compound that acts upon enzymes, or substrate, in many enzyme-catalyzed reactions in the cells of animals, plants, and microorganisms. ATP's chemical bonds store a large amount of chemical energy and functions as the carrier of chemical energy from energy-yielding oxidation of food to energy demanding cellular processes. ADP, or adenosine diphosphate, is the end product that results when ATP loses one of its phosphate groups located at the end of the molecule. The ATP synthase enzyme is an enzyme that can synthesize ATP from ADP and inorganic phosphate by using some form of energy. The conversion of these two molecules play a critical role in supplying energy for many processes of life. In Muller's thermosynthesis world, the ATP synthase enzyme that sustains chemiosmosis is proposed as today's enzyme that is the closest connected to the first metabolic process. First, life needed an energy source to bring about the condensation reaction that yielded the peptide bonds of proteins and the phosphodiester bonds of RNA. In a generalization and thermal variation of the binding change mechanism of today's ATP synthase, the first protein would have bound substrates and condensed them to a reaction product that remained bound, until after a temperature change, it was released by thermal unfolding. The energy source of the thermosynthesis world was thermal cycling, the result of suspension of the protocell in a convection current, as is plausible in a volcanic hot spring. The convection accounts for the self-organization and dissipative structure required in any origin of life model. The still ubiquitous role of thermal cycling in germination and cell division is considered a relic of primordial thermosynthesis. By catalyzing cell membrane lipids, this first protein gave a selective advantage to the lipid protocell that contained the protein. In the beginning, this first protein also synthesized a library of many proteins, which only a minute fraction had thermosynthesis capabilities. Just as proposed by Freeman John Dyson, the first protein propagated functionally. It made daughters with similar capabilities, but it did not copy itself. Functioning daughters consisted of different amino acids and sequences. It is assumed RNA sequences were selected among the randomly synthesized RNAs by the relative speed and efficiency increase of first protein synthesis. For instance, by the creation of RNA that functioned as messenger RNA, transfer RNA, and ribosomal RNA, or even more generally, all the components of the RNA world were also generated and selected. The thermosynthesis world would therefore, in theory, account for the origin of the genetic machinery. Whereas the iron-sulfur world identifies a circular pathway as the most simple, and therefore assumes the existence of enzymes, the thermosynthesis world does not even invoke a pathway and does not assume the existence of regular enzymes. ATP synthesis binding change mechanism resembles a physical absorption process that yields free energy rather than a regular enzymes mechanism which decreases the free energy. The RNA world also implies the existence of several enzymes, but even the emergence of a single enzyme by chance is implausible. The thermosynthesis world is therefore more simple and thus more plausible than the iron, sulfur, and RNA worlds. Possible role of bubbles. Waves breaking on the shore create a delicate foam composed of bubbles. Winds sweeping across the ocean have a tendency to drive things to shore, much like driftwood collecting on the beach. It is possible that organic molecules were concentrated on the shorelines in much the same way. Shallow coastal waters also tend to be warmer, further concentrating the molecules through evaporation. While bubbles composed mostly of water burst quickly, water containing a chemical compound possessing both hydrophilic and hydrophobic properties, called amphiphiles, forms much more stable bubbles, lending more time to the particular bubble to perform these crucial reactions. Amphiphiles are oily compounds containing a hydrophilic head on one or both ends of a hydrophobic molecule. Some amphiphiles have the tendency to spontaneously form membranes in water. A spherically closed membrane contains water and is a hypothetical precursor to the modern cell membrane. If a protein would increase the integrity of its parent bubble, that bubble had an advantage. Primitive reproduction can be envisioned when the bubbles burst, releasing the results of the experiment into the surrounding medium. Once enough of the right stuff was released into the medium, the development of the first prokaryotes, eukaryotes, and multicellular organisms could be achieved. Similarly, bubbles formed entirely out of protein-like molecules called microspheres will form spontaneously under the right conditions, but they are not a likely precursor to the modern cell membrane, as cell membranes are composed primarily of lipid compounds rather than amino acid compounds. A recent model suggests that the enclosure of an autocatalytic non-enzymatic metabolism within protocells may have been one way of avoiding the side reaction problem that is typical of metabolism-first models. Possible role of pumice rafts. An alternative, or perhaps adjunct, theory to the formation of bubbles via waves breaking on the shore, creating delicate foam, is the hypothetical creation of bubbles formed within pores of a pumice raft. Like the windblown foam, the pumice rafts would also have made landfall, and this is observed in modern times. Paleontological evidence of pumice rafts associated with Archean life have been discovered in Australia. Although the windblown concentration of organic molecules may have been a key part of the abiogenesis puzzle, even with amphiphilic stabilization, exposure to the elements may have rendered the fragile foam too unstable to be an abiogenesis precursor and/or its ongoing natural selection factor. a possibly more probable bubble formation environment for the cradle of life to occur would have been the protected environment within the pores of the pumice. The crucial reaction time necessary could have been greatly extended in this protected environment. Relatively rapid selection pressure could have been applied if the pumice raft landed on active geothermal outgassing percolation, acting something like an airstone in an aquarium, pumping out massive quantities of various bubble quasi-species, and then species probabilistically interacting and evolving. We now come to the end of the spoken article, Abiogenesis, Part 3. The next part of the recording, Part 4, contains Section 5, Other Models. The fourth and last part begins now. Abiogenesis, Section 5, Other Models. Autocatalysis. In 1993, Stuart Kaufman proposed that life initially arose as autocatalytic chemical networks. Autocatalysts are substances that catalyze the production of themselves, and therefore have the property of being a simple replicator. In his book, The Selfish Gene, biologist Richard Dawkins cites experiments performed by the chemist Julius Rebeck and his colleagues at the Scripps Research Institute in California that demonstrated the possibility that autocatalysts could exhibit competition within a population of entities with heredity, which could be interpreted as a rudimentary form of natural selection. Clay Hypothesis. A model for the origin of life based on clay was forwarded by A. Graham Carnes-Smith of the University of Glasgow in 1985, and explored as a plausible illustration by several scientists. The clay hypothesis postulates that complex organic molecules arose gradually on a pre-existing non-organic replication platform, in this case, silicate crystals in solution. Complexity in companion molecules developed as a function of selection pressures on types of clay crystal is then exapted, that is, the crystal shifts in the function of a trait during its evolution in order to serve the replication of organic molecules independently of their silicate launch stage. In 2007, chemist Bart Carr and colleagues reported their experiments to examine the idea that crystals can act as a source of transferable information. Mother crystals with imperfections were cleaved and used as seeds to grow daughter crystals from solution. They then examined the distribution of imperfections in the crystal system and found that the imperfections in the mother crystals were indeed reproduced in the daughters, but the daughter crystals had many additional imperfections. For gene-like behavior to be observed, the quantity of inheritance of these perfections should have exceeded that of the mutations in the successive generations, and it did not. Thus, Carr concludes that crystals, quote, were not faithful enough to store and transfer information from one generation to the next, end quote. Gould's Deep Hot Biosphere Model. In the 1970s, the astrophysicist Thomas Gould proposed the theory that life first developed not on the surface of the Earth, but several kilometers below the surface. The discovery in the late 1990s of nanobes, filamental structures that are smaller than bacteria but that may contain DNA, in deep rocks might be seen as lending support to Gould's theory. It is now reasonably well established that microbial life is plentiful at shallow depths in the earth, up to 5 kilometers or 3.1 miles below the surface, in the form of extremophile archaea rather than the better known eubacteria, which live in more accessible conditions. It is claimed that discovery of microbial life below the surface of another body in our solar system would lend significant credence to this theory. Thomas Gould also asserted that a trickle of food from a deep, unreachable source is needed for survival, because life arising in a puddle of organic material is likely to consume all of its food and become extinct. Gould's theory is that flow of food is due to outgassing of primordial methane from the Earth's mantle. More conventional explanations of the food supply of deep microbes away from sedimentary carbon compounds is that the organisms subsist on hydrogen released by an interaction between water and reduced iron compounds in rocks. Primitive extraterrestrial life. An alternative to earthly abiogenesis is the hypothesis that primitive life may have originally formed extraterrestrially, either in space or on Mars, a nearby planet. A supporter of this theory was Francis Crick. Organic compounds are relatively common in space, especially in the outer solar system, where volatiles are not evaporated by solar heating. Comets are encrusted by outer layers of dark material, thought to be a tar-like substance composed of complex organic material formed from simple carbon compounds after reactions initiated mostly by irradiation by ultraviolet light. It is supposed that a rain of material from comets could have brought significant quantities of such complex organic materials to Earth. An alternative but related hypothesis proposed to explain the presence of life on Earth so soon after the planet had cooled down, with apparently very little time for prebiotic evolution, is that life formed first on early Mars. Due to its smaller size, Mars cooled before Earth, a difference of hundreds of millions of years, allowing prebiotic processes there while Earth was still too hot. Life was then transported to the cooled Earth when crustal material was blasted off Mars by asteroid and comet impacts. Mars continued to cool faster and eventually became hostile to the continued evolution or even existence of life. It lost its atmosphere due to low volcanism. Earth is following the same fate as Mars, but at a slower rate. The advantage of an extraterrestrial origin of primitive life is that life is not required to have evolved on each planet it occurs on, but rather in a single location and then spread about the galaxy to other star systems via cometary and/or meteorite impact. Evidence to support the hypothesis is scant, but it finds support in recent study of Martian meteorites found in Antarctica and in studies of extremophile microbes. Additional support comes from a recent discovery of a bacterial ecosystem whose energy source is radioactivity. A 2001 experiment led by chemist Jason Dworkin subjected a frozen mixture of water, methanol, ammonia, and carbon monoxide to UV radiation, mimicking conditions found in an extraterrestrial environment. This combination yielded large amounts of organic material that self-organized to form bubbles, or micelles, when immersed in water. Dworkin considered these bubbles to resemble cell membranes that enclose and concentrate the chemistry of life, separating their interior from the outside world. The bubbles produced in these experiments were between 10 to 40 micrometers, which is 39 ten-thousandths to 16 ten-thousandths inches, or about the size of red blood cells. Remarkably, the bubbles fluoresced, absorbing UV and converting it into visible light in this way, was considered one possible way of providing energy to a primitive cell. If such bubbles played a role in the origin of life, the fluorescence could have been a precursor to primitive photosynthesis. Such fluorescence also provides the benefit of acting as a sunscreen, diffusing any damage that otherwise would be inflicted by UV radiation. Such a protective function would have been vital for life on the early Earth, since the ozone layer, which blocks out the sun's most destructive UV rays, did not form until after photosynthetic life began to produce oxygen. Extraterrestrial organic molecules. Another idea is that amino acids, which were formed extraterrestrially, arrived on Earth via comets. In 2009, it was announced by NASA that scientists had identified one of the fundamental chemical building blocks of life in a comet for the first time. Glycine, an amino acid, was detected in the material ejected from Comet Wild 2 in 2004 and collected by NASA's Stardust probe. Tiny grains, just a few thousandths of a millimeter in size, were collected from the comet and returned to Earth in 2006 in a sealed capsule and distributed among the world's leading astrobiology labs. NASA said in a statement that it took some time for the investigating team, led by Dr. Jamie Elsila, to convince itself that the glycine signature found in Stardust's sample bay was genuine and not just earthly contamination. Glycine has been detected in meteorites before, and there is also observations in interstellar gas clouds claimed for telescopes. But the Stardust find is described as a first in cometary material. Isotope analysis indicates that the late heavy bombardment included cometary impacts after the Earth coalesced, but before life evolved. Dr. Carl Pilcher, who leads NASA's Astrobiology Institute, commented that, quote, "The discovery of glycine in a comet supports the idea that the fundamental building blocks of life are prevalent in space, and strengthens the argument that life in the universe may be common rather than rare," end quote. Recent observations suggest that the majority of organic compounds introduced on Earth by interstellar dust particles are considered principal agents in the formation of complex molecules thanks to their peculiar surface catalytic activities. Studies reported in 2008 based on isotopic ratios of organic compounds found in the Murchison meteorite, carbon-12 and carbon-13, suggested that the RNA component uracil and related molecules were formed extraterrestrially. On August 8, 2011, a report based on NASA studies with meteorites found on Earth was published suggesting DNA components, adenine, guanine, and related organic molecules, were made in outer space. More recently, scientists found that the cosmic dust permeating the universe contains complex organic matter that could be created naturally and rapidly by stars. Lipid World. The lipid world theory postulates that the first self-replicating object was lipid-like. It is known that phospholipids formed lipid bilayers in water while under agitation, the same structure as in cell membranes. These molecules were not present on early Earth. However, other amphiphilic long-chain molecules also form membranes. Furthermore, these bodies may expand by insertion of additional lipids, and under excessive expansion may undergo spontaneous splitting, which preserves the same size and composition of lipids in the two progenies. The main idea in this theory is that the molecular composition of the lipid bodies is the preliminary way for information storage, and evolution led to the appearance of polymer entities such as RNA or DNA that may store information favorably. Studies on vesicles from potentially prebiotic amphiphiles have so far been limited to systems containing one or two types of amphiphiles. This is in contrast to the output of simulated prebiotic chemical reactions, which typically produce very heterogeneous mixtures of compounds. Within the hypothesis of a lipid bilayer membrane composed of a mixture of various distinct amphiphilic compounds, there is the opportunity of a huge number of theoretically possible combinations in the arrangements of these amphiphiles in the membrane. Among all these potential combinations, a specific local arrangement of the membrane world would have favored the constitution of a hypercycle, a positive feedback compared of two mutual catalysts represented by a membrane site and a specific compound trapped in the vesicle. Such site/compound pairs are transmissible to the daughter vesicles, leading to the emergence of distinct lineages of vesicles, which would have allowed Darwinian natural selection. Polyphosphates. The problem with most scenarios of abiogenesis is that the thermodynamic equilibrium of amino acids versus peptides is in the direction of separate amino acids. What has been missing is some force that drives polymerization. The resolution of this problem may well be in the properties of polyphosphates. Polyphosphates are formed by polymerization of ordinary monophosphate ions. Several mechanisms for such polymerization have been suggested. Polyphosphates cause polymerization of amino acids into peptides. They are also logical precursors in the synthesis of such key biochemical compounds as ATP. The key issue seems to be that calcium reacts with solid soluble phosphate to form an insoluble calcium phosphate. So some plausible mechanism must be found to keep calcium ions from causing precipitation of phosphate. There has been much work on this topic over the years. Meteorites may have introduced reactive phosphorus species early. There has been much work on this topic over the years, but an interesting new idea is that meteorites may have introduced reactive phosphorus species on the early Earth. polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, the PAH world hypothesis. Other sources of complex molecules have been postulated, including extraterrestrial stellar or interstellar origin. For example, from spectral analyses, organic molecules are known to be present in comets and meteorites. In 2004, a team detected traces of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAH, in a nebula. More recently, in 2010, another team also detected PAHs, along with fullerenes, or, quote, buckyballs, end quote, in nebulae. PAHs are the most complex molecules so far found in space. The use of PAHs has also been proposed as a precursor to the RNA world in the PAH world hypothesis. The Spitzer Space Telescope has recently detected a star, HH46-IR, which is forming by a process similar to that by which the Sun formed. In the disk of material surrounding the star, there is a very large range of molecules, including cyanide compounds, hydrocarbons, and carbon monoxide. PAHs have also been found all over the surface of galaxy M81, which is 12 million light-years away from the Earth, confirming their widespread distribution on Earth. Multiple genesis. Different forms of life may have appeared quasi-simultaneously in the early history of Earth. The other forms may be extinct, leaving distinctive fossils through their different biochemistry, such as using arsenic instead of phosphorus, survive as extremophiles, or simply be unnoticed through their being analogous to organisms of the current life tree. The molecular biologist Hyman Hartman, for example, combines a number of theories together by proposing that, quote, the first organisms were self-replicating iron-rich clays, which fixed carbon dioxide into oxalic and other dicarboxylic acids. This system of replicating clays and their metabolic phenotype then evolved into the sulfide-rich region of the hot spring, acquiring the ability to fix nitrogen. Finally, phosphate was incorporated into the evolving system, which allowed the synthesis of nucleotides and phospholipids. If biosynthesis recapitulates biopsis, then the synthesis of amino acids preceded the synthesis of the purine and pyrimidine bases. Furthermore, the polymerization of the amino acid thioesters into polypeptides preceded the directed polymerization of amino acid esters by polynucleotides. End quote. Biologist Lynn Margulies' endosymbiotic theory suggests that multiple forms of archaea entered into symbiotic relationship to form the eukaryote cell. The horizontal transfer of genetic material between archaea promotes such symbiotic relationships, and thus many separate organisms may have contributed to building what has been recognized as the last universal common ancestor of modern organisms. James Lovelock's Gaia theory proposes that such symbiosis establishes the environment as a system produced by and supportive of life. We now come to the end of the last part, that is, part 4 of the spoken article, Abiogenesis. This sound file, its text, and all the text in the article are licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 Unported License, available at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by-sa/3.0.